Michelle and Junie here on this good Saturday morning, Nashville. What a great time of the year this really is. And I think last night showed it because we had some awesome playoff games in the NBA, in the NHL. But a game that we had on our station last night is something that I want to get into first this morning. And that is the Milwaukee Admirals, getting a 2-1 victory at home against the Texas Stars, our rival, the minor league affiliate of the Dallas Stars, for the to win the Central Division portion of the AHL playoffs. And two names in particular were the goal scorers last night. And I got to tell you, these guys are looking really good. And I'm looking at Luke Evangelista, who came up for the Nashville Predators this year. He was probably the most anticipated forward to come up, from the AHL and get some playing time. He got a goal last night, but maybe one of the biggest stories that not a lot of Preds fans are talking about has got to be Joakim Kimmel. You know, Junie Riddle here. We're kind of waiting on Michelle Knezovic. You know, she's on a little bit of a detour here, so she's going to be joining us in a few minutes and taking the reins. But right now, you know, Frazier, I don't know if you got an opportunity to watch any of the Admirals game last night or just got a recap of it. But, you know, Joakim Kimmel, this guy got drafted last year in 2022, and he was supposed to be a top five pick, you know, somewhere in the top five, top seven range, one of the more talented guys. And because of injury, he slid into the teens to where the Preds could go in and scoop him up. I think they picked at 17 last year. And this guy has got 14 points in 15 games in the AHL since being called up. And he hadn't even been in the system for a full year.
It's incredible. It really is incredible.
I just think this team in general is incredible. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk of, you know, why the Preds are really hyping up the Admirals so much more this year. And I think a lot of it has to do, you know, with them being really successful and being one of the better teams in the AHL. Askarov being probably one of the premier goalie prospects in that league right now. But We've been talking about it the last couple of weeks, and Nick Kieser's been filling in for Michelle, you know, since she's been going on a lot of vacations, Miss Continental USA. But, I mean, you look up and down this roster, and about, you know, 7, 8, 9 guys were called up for the Nashville Predators this season alone. And it just kind of goes to show you that the young future of this Preds team can be really bright. And when you see this core fighting, scratching, clawing to compete to make the playoffs, and the fact that it went down to the final weekend of the season shows that, you know, if these guys can, you know, get a little bit more maturation going in Milwaukee, that, you know, I think some of these guys could come up as soon as this year and start to make an impact on the third and fourth lines for the Preds. But Joakim Kimmel, that is a name to look out for. I don't know. I highly doubt that he would get called up to the Preds this season, but especially going into the 2024 campaign, or if we see, you know, an injury-riddled team like we did this past year, could we see him maybe potentially get a game or two to get called up? You never know. But just another good game for the young Preds going out here. But switching over to the big leagues here, the NBA and the NHL playoffs were last night. The Maple Leafs and the Florida Panthers was an awesome game 5 in Toronto. You know, the Maple Leafs go down 3-0, and they get a win down in Fort Lauderdale in game 4. And you would think that with the offensive power that the Maple Leafs had, that they would have really seized the opportunity to play at home. The Panthers take a 2-goal early lead, and the Leafs score a goal in the second and third to tie it up and send it to OT. But the Florida Panthers, the 8th seed, the team that needed the Pittsburgh Penguins to choke away the final 3 games of the season just to get in, end up moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since 1996. So my entire life, the Florida Panthers have never been to the Eastern Conference Finals, and they finally make it, and they are going to take on another Southern team the Carolina Hurricanes that just knocked off the New Jersey Rangers.
It's going to be an interesting matchup there because, you know, mentioning the Florida Panthers beating Toronto, like, that's pretty crazy because a lot of Toronto fans this year were like, oh, this is the year. This is the year. Like, we could really do it. Kind of like Tennessee fans, you know, every now and then. Like, hey, this is the year. But for Florida, it's going to be one of those type of things where you got guys that used to play for the Preds like Nick Cousins that are going to be chipping in. Like, last night had the OT winning goal.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, if you have guys like him that are going to chip in for Florida and possibly make a little bit of some noise against Carolina. I mean,
well, they won the President's Trophy last year, and you add Matthew Tkachuk to that situation, and they dealt with injuries for a lot of this season and kind of got healthy and caught fire at the right time. I mean, I'm pretty sure the Preds swept the Panthers this year. If I might be mistaken, I know for a fact that the Preds did beat them.
I'll double check
late, for you. Later in the year. With the young guys at the helm, I think it was like a 2-1 game, and I think really Soros stole the game because I think Florida dominated the possession. But, you know, Florida catching fire at the right time, they're a really good story. And moving on to another Florida team, the Miami Heat, also an 8 seed, had to be in the play-in tournament. They're now going to the Eastern Conference Finals after knocking off the New York Knicks, which was another really, really good defensive game, which – if I mean, you talk to me, I'm old-fashioned, I'm old school.
Yeah.
I love a good defensive, hard-nosed, physical battle in the NBA. So a lot going on in that Miami, what is it, Dade County area for the Panthers and the Miami Heat to go on to their respective conference finals.
It did hurt a little bit. I am a Knicks fan, so like it did hurt a little bit. I was like, darn. Because Brunson, I think, dropped like 41 or something. It was ridiculous. I mean, he carried the team majority of the game, and he got guys like R.J. Barrett and Julius Randle who really didn't show up the way that I thought they would. You know, Bam Adebayo was really big in the paint this whole postseason run for him so far, especially against the Knicks in their series. So, I mean, you know, Robbie's a big Miami fan. He keeps saying Spoelstra's probably the best coach right now in the playoffs, and I agree. I totally agree.
Yeah, Stephen A. Smith had some harsh words about Barrett and Randle, saying that Randle needs to be traded and that R.J. Barrett really needs to work on his game this offseason. I mean, R.J. Barrett, back when he played for Duke, was one of the, you know, highly anticipated prospects coming out. And that has just not been the case. It just really hasn't translated as well to the NBA. So, you know, the Knicks, they're going to really have to find something. But about the Heat, I'm kind of shocked because, you know, Jimmy Butler had such a great series against the Milwaukee Bucks. And in this series, he really wasn't all that good. Only 7-22 from the field, 24 points, you know, at the end of the day. But, you know, not as efficient as he's normally been. You had mentioned, you know, Bam had a really good game. But I don't know. I'm kind of surprised that, you know, Miami didn't really put their best foot forward in this series. And they still won in 6 games. So that's going to be really interesting going forward. I would say, honestly, if the Heat keep playing the way they did in this series,
right,
whoever wins this Game 7 with the 76ers and Celtics are going to move on to the NBA Finals, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would have to say a little add-on to the Miami-Knicks series. It was, for me, that, you know, you said Jimmy didn't do much. I think...
Well, he did stuff. He had a good game. I'm
like,
just saying,
point wise,
like
yes,
taking over a game and being as efficient as he normally is.
Right, right.
It
right.
wasn't the same as dominant as he was
as
against the Milwaukee
40
Bucks.
Point Jimmy. Exactly. No, I feel like he did more of the assist and dish type thing in this series.
Yes.
Due to the fact that, you know, the Knicks don't have the best big man down low, Mitchell Robinson and Hartenstein. Like, yeah, those guys are decent. They get the job done for the Knicks, but they're not top quality guys like Rudy Gobert or a Bam Adebayo.
On the low, I am a Mitchell Robinson hater.
Really?
Yeah. So he actually committed to my alma mater, WKU,
mm-hmm,
and he showed up in the beginning of the year. He stayed for like 2 weeks, ended up leaving, coming back and getting our hopes up again. And again, Mitchell Robinson at the time was like a perennial top 10 player in the nation. When you're WKU and you get a top 10 player in the nation, I mean, that's awesome. So he left and we were devastated, and he came back and tried again. And then he left again, winded up sitting out, and then gets drafted to the Knicks. So
that's one sick tease.
Whenever Mitchell Robinson loses, I win. So so I was very happy about that. But we got to get into the series of the NBA playoffs. And that was the Warriors and Lakers. The defending champions going up against LeBron, all those finals between the Warriors and Cavs. It was great to see this series again. but I think it disappointed. I thought it really, really disappointed. And I'm not just saying that because I was pulling for the Warriors to win. Like, you know, I'm kind of anti-LeBron, but, you know, I kind of like seeing him as kind of the older, more humble, you know, leader, mentor, rather than kind of being the young, always whining and complaining. I kind of like this version of LeBron a bit better. But, you know, with the Warriors, flat out, Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, like, they didn't show up like they normally did. You know, Curry was shooting, like, I believe – under 30% from three this entire series, which is just awful. I mean, last night, 11 of 28, 4 of 14 from three. You know, he had 32 points, but that was more or less from volume. Klay Thompson, I mean, he couldn't make a damn thing. I mean, 3 of 19, 2 of 12 from three. Draymond Green, only 9 points, didn't really do much outside of that. Only 3 assists for Draymond, who is, you know, kind of a bit of a forward facilitator for the team. It was just super disappointing. I really wanted to see this series go to 7 and be highly competitive from game to game, and I just felt like it wasn't. LeBron and the Lakers, I felt like, had a grasp of this series for the entire duration.
I will say, though, about Klay Thompson, you made a great point. Where was he last night? Only 2 threes out of 8 that he shot went in, and only 8 points total. And everybody knows the Game 6 Klay, like, oh my gosh, where's the Game 6 Klay? 30-plus points. No, it didn't even show up. So, yeah, I agree. That was a big disappointment.
The plus-minus, I mean, when you look at these guys on the floor, the plus-minus is insane. Draymond Green, minus 26. Andrew Wiggins, minus 26. Curry, minus 21. Klay Thompson, minus 33.
Yikes.
Gary Payton II, minus 18. And I think his father would be very disappointed with that kind of performance. And you look at Golden State's bench, all of them were plus points when they were in the game. So it seemed like the Golden State Warriors bench was getting a lot more production when they were getting time than the Warriors starters. So kind of disappointed with that. Thought this would be a little bit more of a competitive series. You know, I really was looking forward to this, and it, like I said, it was kind of a bummer. But, you know, we're waiting tonight for Celtics and 76ers to see who's going to play the Heat. We got Nuggets and Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. And also, the Vegas Golden Knights last night, very competitive game with the Oilers. They won 4-3 in a very highly competitive matchup. And for me, I'm kind of pulling for Edmonton. I kind of like the McDavid, Draisaitl, you know, Ekholm's there now.
Likewise,
I think they're the most fun hockey team to watch now. They're kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs of the NHL. So really would like to see them kind of get over the hump. I think this kind of is their year. But, you know, Vegas, a much deeper team. I feel like a much better defensive team, better goaltending is giving them a lot of fit. So we will see where we will go with that. But coming up next, the biggest story of the week outside of the playoffs has been the NFL schedule release. Michelle Knesvik will be joining us for the remainder of the show after the break. We will get into the Titans schedule and some of the awesome release videos that came out from the NFL teams. You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
The Boston Bobcats. No idea.
Baltimore Orioles.
That was the Tennessee Titans social media team with one of the best schedule release videos. It went viral all over the entire NFL. Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. I'm 102.5, 106.3 The Game. I'm Michelle Knesvik. Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser are live from our game studios presented by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. And I am live from the Rex Rhodes household right now. House sitting this weekend, guys. How we doing?
You just called Frazier Kieser.
Oh my gosh. Why do I do that all the time?
I did
it's
it.
Okay, Michelle.
I did it last week while you were gone.
No, it's because when I host Chase and Michelle, it's Chase and Michelle with Nick Kieser. And sometimes it's Chase and Michelle with Junie and Nick Kieser. And then it's Michelle and Junie with Nick Frazier. It is like names.
I'll give her the benefit of the doubt here. I was filling in a little bit this week, so I will give her the benefit of the doubt.
Nick Frazier. Oh my goodness. I'm so sorry. And that is not the first time I've done that.
It's okay. Howdy, everybody.
It's been a morning, but I am live from the Rex World household. So if you notice this background when Joe does his show from home.
No, well, I can't.
But I heard you guys talk.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I heard you guys talking about the NBA playoffs quickly. I just want to put my two cents in on that before we get into all of these videos, because they were just amazing. Junie, I know you ranked all of theirs. You watched every single video, which I give you major props to. I don't think I would have the patience to watch every single one, but I agree with you guys. Lakers-Warriors series, highly disappointing. I think the 76ers-Celtics has been the best one. Lakers-Warriors has been a blowout on either side. Klay Thompson didn't realize he was in the postseason and hasn't showed up. Same with Poole for the Warriors. I don't know. At one point, he played for 14 minutes, had 0 points and four fouls. But, yep, the dynasty comes to an end. LeBron looks like LeBron. The Lakers look good, and they'll move on to face the Nuggets, which I'm very excited for that series. And then, obviously, as you mentioned, 76ers and Celtics tonight back in Boston. 76ers had quite a lead on this one, and I thought they would have been able to close it out a couple games ago, but Boston fought to seven, so that'll be a fun one coming up. But schedule release. Can we crown the Tennessee Titans social media team for the best release video?
I would say it's definitely the most funny. I got the most humor out of it. But when I was doing my rankings, you know, obviously that went into play because it definitely gave me the biggest laugh. And I definitely watched it over and over again because of, you know, how short, sweet it was. But I kind of put in creativity and kind of, you know, who was in it and what was the kind of storyline. So they're definitely in my top five, but I can't go against the Chargers and all the Easter eggs and the subtle hints and drops and who they take shots at. You know, the whole, you know, Jackson Mahomes thing was hilarious with the ankle bracelet. Like that was awesome. So I always give it to the Chargers because you know anime and the whole you know cartoon and getting all that done, that takes a lot of work and creativity. So I had to give it to the Chargers.
I think the Tennessee Titans win for the most simple but effective.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it definitely got the most views. There was a graphic yesterday. And again, I'm sure the video with as many people have reposted it and shared it. And I think the Titans even tweeted it out again. I look at it as, you know, it was definitely the most viewed. It was definitely the easiest to watch. You know, it was a great laugh. I mean, I found it hilarious. The whole the Pirates of the Caribbean. And then what did the girl say about the Jaguars in Week 18? Like that doesn't even exist.
Oh yeah, not even a team. Doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. And then the Chester Cheeto. I mean, it was awesome. And then both group of girls calling the Colts the Cowboys. Like,
oh my gosh. I mean, awesome. I think that one takes the cake. And now that the NFL teams on Twitter, like for instance, the Falcons have changed their Twitter handle name. Or I'm sorry, their name on Twitter to the Red Stallions.
Rawr.
And the Colts have changed theirs to not the Cowboys.
Yeah, no. And then also in the bio of the Falcons, it says "rawr" because that's what the girl said. There's screenshots of that young woman going around and saying this is the most shared woman in sports of the week because of how many times they used her in that video. But no, it was excellent work by the Titans. It hands down is probably the best piece of content that they've put out. And people are going to remember that and talk about that throughout the season. So props to the Titans. You definitely had the funniest video drop of the schedule release. It was absolutely hysterical.
So, Junie, we mentioned obviously the Tennessee Titans video. We mentioned the Chargers. One of my favorite parts of the Chargers one, which was the anime theme. And let us know what you think on all the schedule release videos. Text us, call us, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. What was your favorite one? What one did you enjoy the most, gave you the biggest smile? You know, we do talk about the schedule release. And as much as, you know, Junie, when you were on filling in this week for Chase, we talked about, you know, when you play your divisional matchups, when you play certain teams in their cities, weather, all of that stuff that plays into, you know, a football game. But this is just such a fun aspect that teams have done, is creating these unique videos to release the schedule. And one of my favorite parts of the Chargers one was Derrick Henry laying on a board, and essentially they were building him with like more muscles on him.
Yeah. And did you see the Easter eggs in the Titans slot there that they added in? Did you see what they put in there?
No, I didn't.
So off to the side of the table where Derrick Henry is getting operated on, there is a banana and a thing of mayo sitting on the floor.
Of course.
So like
that's subtle.
So a little subtlety towards the drafting of Will Levis. So it's just like the little things and the detail and the all encompassing stuff that goes into, you know, what the Chargers did. And also, like, you know, because like last year when they played the Titans, they did a kind of play on the anime show Attack on Titan about like the, you know, big Derrick Henry going over the wall, kind of like the big giants in that TV show. And I only know this because the guy that used to work in our promotions department is a huge Attack on Titans fans, Gates. But this time around, instead of that, they did the whole like Teen Titans, like the big T building of where like Robin and all of them hung out. I don't know if you've ever seen that TV show, but no, that was also a really good subtlety in making Derrick Henry the cyborg, which is one of the characters in that show. I mean, it was just great. All the subtleties, but one that I know that you watched that I also really, really liked because I love this TV show, was the play by the Bears with Mr.
Yes.
Beef. And I thought the way that they did that, I don't know if you've seen that TV show. I assume you have because, you know, Mr. Ryan,
yes.
Ryan from Chicago probably made you. But the way they portrayed that and kind of implanted that and them dissing their divisional opponents and stuff like, I thought that one was super, super well done. Justin Fields making a cameo in there and all that stuff. So that one was also one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, Junie. So that one, if people aren't familiar with the TV show, it's got one of the Shameless stars, Jeremy Allen White, who is essentially the main character on this show. And it's about, you know, a sandwich shop in Chicago where they make Italian beefs, right? Just the heart of Chicago, their sandwich. And right, Justin Fields is there, a couple other players, a couple other Chicago people are in there, you know, making the sandwiches. They have the receipts coming out, you know, when you like, if you ever work in a restaurant, the receipts and the order, and then the orders are like week one, Packers. And then dissing the opponents, right? Vikings fans trying to come in the sandwich shop. No. You can't get in here. Yeah, I really like that one too.
They said if you're with the Vikings, you get to hiking. Like, I thought that was
great. And they add the Chicago act, like they go overboard, but it's fun. I like that one too. What were some other ones, Junie? And give us your official top 10, so then people maybe can get a sense of, okay, which one should I go and watch?
I gotta go to my Twitter, but I'll tell you my number two. So Chargers were number one, Bears were my number three, I believe, but one of the ones that I really, really liked was the New England Patriots. They were doing the whole thing with Devin McCourty about the retirement home. And I would say, like, if I was a Patriots fan, I would love that because you get to see a bunch of the old legends and stuff like that. And, like, they're kind of taking shots at Gronk and all this stuff. And at the very end, when Devin McCourty's about to walk out the door, he opens it up. And by golly, who is it? It is the GOAT himself, Tom Brady. And when I saw Tom Brady in the New England Patriots schedule release, I was like, okay, this automatically, I don't care, you know, who does what, this has got to be in my top five. I mean, it was excellent, excellent work by the New England Patriots.
I'm surprised he did it, honestly.
I mean, you got to I don't think there's any, you know, hard feelings with that. I mean, Robert Kraft already came out on NFL Network before the schedule released and said that he's going to be there week one and that he's going to kind of, you know, introduce the team and get the crowd hyped up. But I do have my top 10 popped up if you want me to read that off.
Yeah, let's run through it. Before you do that quickly, Junie, to that point, Robert Kraft did say that Tom Brady, he's going to announce the team first game of the year. I'm assuming there'll be some sort of jersey retirement and some sort of giving him something because he now is officially retired. But yeah, go ahead with your top 10 schedule release videos.
Okay, so I started with my top three: Chargers, Patriots, Bears. Number four, Titans, because of the humor. I thought it was great. Number five, Jaguars. I thought, I mean, theirs was super long, but it was well written. It was well played out. Thought that had a lot of thought went into it. It was really good. Panthers was a little bit. Panthers is my number six. Went all over the place, but was really funny as well. I thought it had some good elements. Broncos doing a play on The Office was really funny. Number eight, Commanders. You know, everybody was making fun of their mascot. I think that they honed in on that and went along with the joke and had what I don't even know the name of it, Sergeant Piglet or something. Whatever. He did a couple funny skits that were hilarious. Steelers, I thought was funny as well. You know, their tight end, Zach Gentry, is super dry humor, and they did the whole, like, 1950s educational video. Like, super dry, super funny. And then the Browns doing the whole WWE with the little elf and animated series with The Miz, who's a popular WWE star, also a big Browns fan. I thought that one was really creative and cool as well. So Chargers, Patriots, Bears, Titans, Jags, Panthers, Broncos, Commanders, Steelers, and Browns rounded out my top 10 on the videos.
So Texas, call us all show long. We'll be talking about these videos. Let us know which one your favorite is. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Junie and I are going to discuss where Mike Clay put one of the Tennessee Titans position groups, and also rookie minicamp is underway in a video that got some fans pretty excited on social media. You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.
It's Treylon Burks or bust with this wide receiving core currently. And it's tough to improve it dramatically between now and training camp, because teams aren't going to really part ways with a bunch of guys post June 1st unless they've already announced that they're going to part ways with them post June 1st. Because you don't want the guys around the voluntary workouts with the chance to get injured. I read into that more than most, probably. But the time to make a move at wide receiver was pre or during the draft. That was your best chance to get premium speed, talent, guys who catch the football. And, you know, Vrabel's quote to Ed Werder at the end of last year, you could just rinse and repeat it right now. Yeah. They need guys that can catch the football on a routine basis.
Welcome.
That was Jonathan Hutton on Robbie and Rex Road earlier this week discussing the Tennessee Titans and their wide receiver core. Is it too late to add a major addition that could influence what this offense looks like? Welcome back into Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Michelle Knezvik, Junie Riddle, Nick Frazier live from our game studios presented by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical this morning. Text us, call us 615-737-1025. Taking your thoughts all show long. Junie, you brought up something really interesting when you put it in the grid today, and it was Mike Clay of ESPN, specifically covers the NFL, ranking teams, different position groups. And, you know, earlier I had already seen this one, that he had ranked the Tennessee Titans wide receiver group as 32nd in the entire NFL, which to me didn't really surprise me. I assumed it would either be them or the Houston Texans at the bottom of just the entire NFL. But now you've brought to my attention again that he ranked everybody's offensive line, and starting at the top is the Philadelphia Eagles. Can't say we're surprised with that. And then all the way down at 32nd is the Tennessee Titans. And he lists their starters: Peter Skoronski, Daniel Brunskill, Aaron Brewer, Dylan Raidens, Nicholas Petit-Frere. Although I will say I don't think Dylan Raidens is going to be a starter at that position. It'll be Andre Dillard. Will be in there in that mix. But yeah, it's definitely alarming. And I know, I think you and I and just the entire station, we've had the conversation of the offensive line was so bad last year. And the moves and the changes at the offensive line on paper look better. Yes, they look better. It can't be that bad. But do we really know if it's going to be better? You also don't have the offensive line coach in Keith Carter, and you promoted somebody within who hasn't been an offensive line coach in the NFL before.
Yeah, most certainly. And I think you could only go up from last year. You know, Dennis Daly was one of the worst left tackles I think I've ever seen. With the amount of sacks and the amount of edge rushers that were able to get around him, it's definitely going to be improved. But the improvements that were made outside of drafting Peter Skoronski, to me, were a bit underwhelming. And what was it that Mike Vrabel said after the loss to the Cincinnati Bengals in the divisional round back in 2021? We need to be good around Ryan Tannehill. And what this team has done around Ryan Tannehill has not been good. I mean, you still have Derrick Henry, but you know he's about to be 30 years old. It's only a matter of time that he is going to start to slow down. And the receivers, you know, Treylon Burks, is he going to come into camp in shape? I assume he will, but how productive will he be in a full season? We will have to see. Chigga Conquo, a lot of people are expecting him to be a lot better. But last year, it kind of took a while. And, people on our station have been making a good point that it's been tough for him to stay on the field because he wasn't as good of a blocker and couldn't be in on every single down. So can he improve in that area? So there's a lot of question marks here with this offense in general and how they can get going. And it just really brings a lot of cause for concern for the way the NFL has transitioned from more of a, you know, defense wins championships to now really you need to have a high-power offense to compete. And when you look around the AFC, there's not many offenses that are worse than the Tennessee Titans in totality. So, being 32nd on the offensive line and being 32nd in the wide receiver category, according to Mike Clay, but, you know, I think he's spot on about the wide receiver group. And, you know, if you're going to tell me that the Titans are – you know, last in the league on the offensive line, I'm not really going to argue that either. So it's just very concerning for the way, you know, the Titans are going into the season and how this might play out.
I agree, Junie. And I think what has, you know, kept fans excited is that the fact that they did address some things on the offensive line. Right. They did make moves going into this offseason. It was, well, can you change the entire offensive line in one offseason and bulk up your receiver room in one offseason? No, you can't do both. You cannot do both. So it's clear that they focused on the offensive line with the moves that they made in Daniel Brunskill from the 49ers and Andre Dillard from the Philadelphia Eagles. You draft Peter Skoronski, 11th overall. It's clear that they made those additions. But then on the flip side, you know, fans are looking at the wide receiver core and thinking, okay, there's a lot of what ifs. And, you know, when you draft a wide receiver in the back half of the draft, that's not something that's going to move the needle. I'm not trying to throw shade on, you know, the wide receiver that they drafted, but it's just the reality of it. Sometimes, I mean, yeah, players can, you know, have a breakout. But I think just from the fans' perspective, there's a big question mark on what are you doing? And maybe that's them showing the confidence that they do have in Treylon Burks this offseason. Maybe they feel really confident that he can take the next step as being a wide receiver one for this team. And maybe they feel confident that Kyle Phillips will be able to come in and make a splash this year. But you heard Jonathan Hutton on the sound clip before we started this segment. And he said, it's Treylon Burks or bust.
And it absolutely is. I mean, when you trade your number one wide receiver, the guy that has the most production, your quarterback's favorite target, and you replace him with a first-round pick, this guy has to be somebody. And it's not like we're asking Treylon Burks to be A.J. Brown. I think with what we saw in Philadelphia, you know, A.J. Brown right now is a perennial top five receiver in the league. We need, Treylon Burks needs to be a true number one for the Titans. And if not, then it's not what the Titans thought that they were getting with the 18th overall pick. So with that being said, yes, he has to come out and play big. And other Titans receivers have to step up as well. I look at Kyle Phillips. You know, he had an excellent training camp last year. He has got to stay healthy. He has got to put some weight on. This guy is too talented. He's too good of a route runner. And Tannehill and him already have a connection to where he cannot, be out for majority of the season because – I don't know. From what he showed, the expectations last year was he was going to be a big part of the offense. And it was really disappointing to see all that production and get nothing out of it after week one. And so that's going to have to be a huge thing. But, you know, Mike Clay also did a couple other position groups as well, which I found, you know, interesting. He ranked, QB and QBs, which it's not just the starters. It was just, you know, the QB rooms in general. And he ranked the Titans 21st in the NFL. He also did interior defensive line, which I think is one of the Titans' strengths. And I was kind of surprised. He had him at 10. And I thought the Titans would be a little bit higher than that. I would put them maybe around the 6 or 7 range. And then at edge rusher, which I believe is probably the most key position on the defense. You know, getting to the quarterback, making splash plays on defense is typically coming from those guys on the edge. With the loss of Bud Dupree, which, again, he only played in about 60% of the games while he was here, but to be 21st in the edge rusher category, you know, getting Arden Key, you know, he was a backup last year, you know, Harold Landry coming off an ACL injury. There are some cause for concern with this team, and it seems as if the thing that was their strength last year, which was their front seven, has kind of deteriorated a little bit and is not as good and profound as it was going into the season last year.
Yeah, and Junie, I see all of that too. And I think a lot of it in that ranking could have to do with, you know, question marks. I mean, you mentioned Harold Landry. Yeah, he came off one of his best seasons 2 years ago, but then he tore his ACL. What is he going to look like? Could that be a question mark? You know, how are some of the guys like Azeez Al-Shaair, who they got, like, what is he going to look like in this defense? And I do think you can look at even the secondary and have a lot of question marks on, can Amani Hooker stay healthy? Can Elijah Molden stay healthy? What does Christian Fulton look like this year? There are, you know, a lot of question marks at that. Monty Rice. I mean, there are so many guys who you think can, you know, be effective. But one thing I don't worry about is Mike Vrabel coaching that defense and being able to get everything out of guys. Like, I mean, specifically the secondary, how many people did they have to, you know, plug and play last year because of the injuries, and they were able to, you know, give some sort of production. And I do credit a lot of that to, yes, Shane Bowen, but mostly Mike Vrabel. That's why I think I tend to worry more about this offense. But really quick, before we jump into the Nashville Predators next segment, Junie, you see the videos of Will Levis out there throwing some dimes in rookie minicamp, and some of the fans are getting a little excited, Junie.
I would say he's starting to turn a little heads. We're also going to get into this a little bit later, but Joe Rexroad's piece on him and his background.
Phenomenal.
It was a masterpiece by Joe Rexroad. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a super long article, but it was worth every second of the read. So I think, you know, Will Levis and his narrative and what he's doing. Again, this is just rookie minicamp. He's only in shorts and a shirt, so this isn't the real thing, but I mean, some of those throws and where he was placing it in the release that he had on the ball, I mean, it looked pretty good, Michelle. I got to say it.
Junie, I was watching the videos, and Mike Vrabel was in the back of some of them, and I was trying to see his facial expression, but every time, like, they would then zoom in on the wide receiver who caught the ball, and I couldn't get Vrabel's face. But I was, like, analyzing the videos of, okay, like, how's Vrabel looking in this? How's Vrabel looking in this when he's throwing the ball?
No, I mean, that's a big part of this because, like I said, if Levis comes in and it's close, I mean, that seat for Ryan Tannehill is going to get pretty hot pretty quick. And with the front half of the schedule that we're going to get into a little bit later, who knows? There could be a change at the quarterback position sometime this season. It's going to get real interesting, Michelle.
Well, somebody's seat who we think could be warming up is already warm. And honestly, based off the comments that Mark, as to what the Nashville Predators are going to do with their head coaching situation. Junie and I will discuss all on the other side. You're listening to Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Where are you at in terms of the evaluation of John Hines, and is there any news on what his status looks like for next year?
No, I said at the press conference, I'm going to evaluate.
That was Barry Trotz on John Hines and what he needs to do before he can officially say who will be the head coach of the Nashville Predators this upcoming season. Welcome back in to Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Barry Trotz did go on to say, that was just a portion of it, but when Robbie Stanley asked about, you know, what where are you at? You said that you were evaluating John Hines at your end of season press conference. Now we're a couple months out. It's May. It was May 10th at the time. The Predators haven't played hockey in a really long time. Where is his head out? And essentially Barry Trotz went on to say, you know, I'm still in the evaluation process. And then something interesting, Jeannie, that I thought he said was, you know, I'm still evaluating the coaches and I will basically do anything, I'm paraphrasing here, to help the team, whether that's on the player side of thing or whether that's on the coaches side of things. So I feel as though when he came on our station, you know, we are the station of the Nashville, the home of the Nashville Predators, we're the Preds radio network. It was an opportunity for him to say, yeah, John, 1 year left on his contract. He's our coach next year. But the fact that the door was left open makes me think a little bit more as to, is he evaluating somebody who is still coaching right now with the Stanley Cup playoffs going on, or Milwaukee is still playing? So I don't know. It just made me kind of raise my ears a little bit more. And I'm not so sure that he could still be the head coach heading into next season.
I will say this, you know, Nick and I got into this conversation last week before he came on with you and Robbie. And I said that I thought that he was going to be the coach. And I thought that, you know, with what he did with the young guys and all the situation, trading four players, eight more guys going down with injury, you know, you basically had your lineup, you know, flipped over on its head. And he brought, you know, probably the most success that you could have got out of that group and kept the Predators in it till, you know, the final two games of the season. But with those comments, and maybe it is just me listening to everybody on our station and how that really kind of changed their ways, I'm definitely kind of, you know, leaning a little bit more towards that, yeah, that door could possibly be open and the Nashville Predators could potentially do a change. I mean, we've never seen Barry Trotz as a GM. We don't know his tendencies. He's always been a coach. And for him being brand new into this role, we don't know how he's going to act. The one thing that you know, I keep thinking about and bringing up is the fact that all the teams that have been eliminated, and even some playoff teams that have already been eliminated, like the New York Rangers moved off their head coach. Why haven't they done it already if they were going to do it? I mean, it's not like you know, Carl Taylor is going anywhere from the Milwaukee Admirals. It's not like the assistant that everybody keeps talking about from the Toronto Maple Leafs is going anywhere. Like, they're going to be there. So it's more of less.
Well, no. I mean, those are like, at least the Toronto Maple Leafs assistant. I mean, he is a candidate for a lot of other teams right now.
Well, I know. And I get that. But it's
they're
like,
not allowed.
It shouldn't be about talking to somebody about a position. I think if you want to move off of your coach, you should move off of your coach. And I think you should have already done that by now, because we're already like a month and a couple weeks out of the Predators season. And I feel like that decision should have already been made because other teams have already made that, you know. And I just don't think that sitting here and kind of, you know, dangling a carrot in front of John Hines' face, like, oh, you know, maybe you'll get it, and, you know, maybe you won't. So I put it at about a 60-40. I think 60% chance that John Hines will be back and that they're not going to give him an extension. I think that more or less it's going to depend on how they start the season next year is depending on whether or not he will keep the job throughout the duration of the season. And, you know, at the end of the year when his contract is up, if the season goes well, then they'll renew him. But if not, then they're going to move on. But, you know, to sit here and say that you haven't made a decision yet and leave that door open to move off of your coach, it just doesn't make a lot of sense with me as to why they would wait for somebody's season is over just to be able to talk with them. You either want the coach or you don't, and you got to make a choice.
So here was Barry Trotz's exact comments on the evaluation of John Hines on Robbie and Rexroad earlier this week.
Where are you at in terms of the evaluation of John Hines, and is there any news on what his status looks like for next year?
No, I exactly what I said at the press conference, I'm going to evaluate. I think John did a terrific job, as I said, when I came on. We sort of moved four players at the trade deadline. He lost eight players to injury, and he continued to, you know, forge on with the group. And what I like about what John did is he just coached the group that he had. And I know John and his staff are good coaches. I sat in their meetings. I listened to them. I understand what they're doing. So with John, I just said, you know, from my perspective, everybody is going to be evaluated. And also, I'm going to evaluate other organizations, too. So if I can improve in any aspect of our organization, be it coaching or development, I'm going to try to do that. But I can tell you the staff is a really good staff. They know what they're doing, and I have a lot of trust in them.
So that was Barry Trotz on John Hines, the entire coaching staff, and just the evaluation process over these last couple of weeks. Judy, I completely understand what you're saying. And, you know, in my head, to play a little devil's advocate for a second, I wonder if they can't get whoever they have their eye on, right? Whoever they have their eye on, you can't talk to them yet because tampering, especially if they're still playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you know, obviously Toronto just got eliminated. You know, are conversations happening? Milwaukee is still playing. You know, is it okay, we'll just ride out with Hines on 1 year left on his deal, or we want this guy? But if we can't get this guy, then we're just going to stay here with Hines. But I completely get what you're saying of, if you believe a guy's not your guy, then why don't you just move off of him?
Well, to me, and I'm going to kind of make an odd comparison with this. It's like if you're dating somebody and it's not going well, and you approach another girl and say, you know, hey, maybe, you know, maybe we could date, and you're trying to gauge how that other person is feeling before you break up with the other person. It's like, no, break up with your girlfriend if it's not going well, and then go find something else. And if it's not the, you know, person that you want it to be, at least it can be somebody else, and you can get out of the bad relationship. I just think the decision to move off John Hines has to come first, depending on whoever Barry Trotz wants to be their coach. That's how I feel about it. I just don't see how you can kind of, you know, well, you know, if this guy wants to be the coach of the Predators, you know, then we're going to move off you, John. But if not, you know, you can come back and still be our coach. That doesn't make any sense to me, and that just sends a bad message to the organization entirely. So I just don't understand why the Predators would do that. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So if you're going to move off Hines, you need to move off of them. And the fact that they haven't already done it, whereas the rest of the league has already moved off of their coaches and made those moves, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I still give a higher percent chance that John Hines is going to come in. He's going to be on a super short leash. And I just think it's really going to depend on how the season goes. If it's a slow start, they'll make a move in the season. If it's a good start, they're going to see where the season goes and probably play it out and make those discussions at the end of the year. So we'll have to see where it goes. But for me right now, I'm 60-40. Hines is going to stay the coach.
Junie, I am on the exact same page as you. I'll throw one more thing in there. I think that, and this is not based off any reporting or anything like that, but we've talked a lot about Carl Taylor. I would not be surprised if he moved up and had some sort of coaching role here with the Nashville Predators, specifically with the power play, because that's what he works on in Milwaukee. Obviously, he's the head coach, but he specifically works with the power play, with the guys, with the young guys there in Milwaukee. And that's something that the Predators have struggled with this last season. So that wouldn't surprise me if he moved into some sort of assistant role here with the Nashville Predators once their season rounds out, of course. Coming up next, hour number two of Michelle and Junie. We're talking Will Levis. We're talking rookie quarterbacks and video surfacing, getting fans excited. Adam in Portland on the text line. He's not buying it yet, but an incredible article by Joe Rex wrote on who Will Levis actually is. Coming up next on Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.